The scariest moment is always just before you start. Stephen King. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Dominate Test Prep podcast. I am Brett Etheridge, founder of Dominate Test Prep and host of this show, where this week we are going to be talking about essays. Not admissions essays, we are going to talk about the essays that you often have to write as part of your standardized test. The essay or essays that actually get a score that count toward your ultimate score on your standardized test. So it is important stuff. I have been getting a lot of questions from listeners and from my students just for help with the essays, and so I thought I would address it head on, and that's exactly what we are going to do. I'm going to share with you 10 tips, 10 actionable things that you can do to boost your essay score if it is a component of your standardized test. So I think you're going to enjoy it. I'm looking forward to sharing this information with you. If you're in front of a computer, get ready to take some notes. If you're listening while you're driving around or you're not in a position to take notes, be safe out there. That's okay. You can come back to it later or just pay attention to the tips that you think will help you the most on your essays. Before we dive in, I do want to give a quick listener shout out. Grad School 2020 left the following review on this podcast. She said, "Unfortunately, I came across this podcast after I had endured the process of applying to graduate schools. I say unfortunately because the episodes are so spot on. I wish I could have listened to them during the process." So I absolutely wish you could have as well, but I'm glad you have found them helpful, and I'm glad you're still listening even after you are already in graduate school. So congratulations, Grad School 2020, if you are listening. I would have given you a free practice test or something for such a great review, not because it's a great review. That's called bribery. So that's not what we're doing here, but just to thank you for taking the time to share your thoughts and for being such a great listener. So I appreciate you, and to everybody else listening, hopefully you're finding it as helpful as well. And I hope and I'm confident that you will find this episode helpful. So let's transition back to today's topic, the essays, and specifically 10 tips that will help you get a great score. Now, before I give you those 10 tips, don't you think it would be important to actually know what constitutes a good essay? What are they even looking for? What do the readers want? What are the criteria of a solid essay? Of course that would be helpful. So that is where we are going to start. So let me actually read to you a description of a 5.5 to 6.0 level essay from the GRE. So if you're taking the GRE, that probably means something to you. On the GRE, the essays, there are two essays, and you get an aggregate score from 0 to 6. And so a 6 would be a great essay, like a perfect essay score. If you're taking a different exam, like the GMAT happens to have the same scoring scale, the SAT, the LSAT, slightly different scales, but it's all generally the same thing. And what they are looking for is pretty consistent across the different standardized tests. So again, this is from the GRE website, but what I'm going to explain here applies to the essay task of whichever standardized test you are going to be taking. So here's what it says, quote, this type of essay, quote, sustains insightful, in-depth analysis of complex ideas, develops and supports main points with logically compelling reasons and/or highly persuasive examples, is well-focused and well-organized, skillfully uses sentence variety and precise vocabulary to convey meaning effectively, demonstrates superior facility with sentence structure and language usage, but may have minor errors that do not interfere with meaning. So some of you guys just gravitated towards that last little bit and you're breathing a sigh of relief saying, okay, so I don't have to be perfect with my grammar, or I'm a terrible speller. Is it even possible to get a perfect score if I misspell some words? Yes, it's still possible. We'll talk about that. But a few of the things that I highlighted and made bold when I was kind of reading this description and wanted to share with you were the words that I kind of slowed down on, like in-depth analysis, persuasive examples, well-organized, sentence variety, right? Facility with sentence structure. So I'm going to kind of break those out into four key features. If you think about what are the components of a well-written, effective essay that will get you a high score, there are really four of them. Number one, what I would call fluency of language. So when they were describing it, that would be things like facility with sentence structure, language usage, that type of thing. Number two would be the mechanics, the grammar, punctuation, spelling. Now, they do say that your essay can have minor errors that do not interfere with meaning, and yet the mechanics are going to be a part of it. We want to make sure that you are an effective writer of the English language. And when I say we, I mean the tests that you are taking. Number three would be content. And obviously that is crucial. And that's where they talk about things like in-depth analysis, persuasive examples, right? That's actually the meat of your essay, the content, the key points in your analysis. And so we'll talk about that a little bit more. But then number four is organization. It literally says the essay is focused and well organized. So those are really kind of the four key features. And here's the good news. If you think about those four key features, what do you notice? How many of them do you have control over? And you might be thinking, well, certainly I have control over all of them, don't I? Yes and no. I mean, at the end of the day, at this point in your life, your writing ability sort of is what it is. Maybe you're a good writer, maybe you're not a great writer. And if you're not a great writer, I have news for you. Yes, there are some things you can do. I'm going to share 10 of them with you here in this episode, and you can work on them and focus on them, but you're not going to become William Shakespeare over the next few months or weeks or however long it is between now and test day. So fluency of language, for example, maybe a little bit harder for you to control. Now, again, there are some things you can do, transition words, transition sentences, things that you can do to help your fluency of language. But same thing with mechanics. We can work on grammar. You can try to become a better speller. You know, there are some things you can learn to improve your English grammar, for example, and I highly encourage you to do that between now and test day. But I would say the things that you have the most control over certainly are your content, the points that you make, the analysis of the argument in the case of an analysis of an argument essay, if that is relevant to the test you are taking, and the organization of the essay. You have complete control over that. And so just sort of keep this in mind. A lot of my tips are geared toward the components that you have more control over, because let's play to our strengths. But I do also have some tips for you about those areas that maybe you have a little bit less control over at this point that I think will help you as well, so that even if you're not a great writer, we can still help you get a great essay score on test day. Okay, now that we know what the test makers are looking for and what constitutes a high-level essay, let's go through the 10 tips that will help you get that perfect score on your essay. And I'm going to move through them fairly quickly because 10 tips is a lot, and otherwise we would be here all day. But I will go into enough detail to ensure that you understand what I'm talking about and what you should and shouldn't be doing. So without further ado, tip number one is to make sure you understand the question. And that includes understanding what the actual prompt is telling you or asking you, and the question itself. So there are always going to be two parts of the essay task. And in some cases, you'll actually have two different essay tasks. So depending on the test you are studying for, you might have to write two essays in the case of the GRE, at least at the time of the recording of this podcast episode, where you have to write an issue essay and an argument essay. But in either case, there is going to be some sort of a prompt, a task, right? In the case of the issue essay, here's a sample one taken straight from the GRE website that says, quote, "A nation should require all of its students to study the same national curriculum until they enter college." So do you understand that? Do you know what a national curriculum is? Do you understand the prompt itself? And it's not overly difficult. They make them general enough that every test taker should understand it and have an opinion on it one way or the other. And really, it doesn't matter what position you take. Can you support your position? But do you understand that prompt? But then it is followed with the question itself or your task. And here is the accompanying task for this particular prompt. It says, write a response in which you discuss your views on the policy and explain your reasoning for the position you take. Do you understand what that means? And it goes on. It says, in developing and supporting your position, you should consider the possible consequences of implementing the policy and explain how these consequences shape your position. So two different aspects that we need to understand. And it, you know, really all it means is take a minute or so to fully get your mind around what the decision point is, what the task is asking you to do, and make sure you understand the question. In the case of the argument essay, I'm not going to bother reading you the really long argument because the argument prompts tend to be a little bit longer. It's a passage essentially that is making an argument. But the question then says, write a response in which you examine the stated and or unstated assumptions of the argument. Be sure to explain how the argument depends on these assumptions and what the implications are for the argument if the assumptions prove unwarranted. So there's a little bit more there. Do you understand that? And if you were lost even just hearing me read that because you're thinking to yourself, what, like assumptions, unstated assumptions, how an argument depends on the assumptions, implication, are the assumptions unwarranted? So if all of that language and wording is confusing to you, we need to make sure you understand that. And I'm not going to go into that here in this episode, but I would actually say go back to episode 9 of the Dominate Test Prep podcast, where we talked about kind of critical reasoning on the GMAT, but also just kind of logical thinking, argument fallacies, logical fallacies. We talked about assumptions and premises and parts of arguments. And then at the end of that show, actually, the guest that I had on, a gentleman named Brandon Royal, he actually walked through a sample argument essay prompt and talked about, you know, what would you say about it? What are some of the common argument fallacies in that particular prompt? And so I think you'll learn a lot about it if you go back and listen to episode 9 to help you understand, in this case, the argument essay prompt and the question that accompanies it. And so that's tip number one. Make sure you understand the question. Tip number two follows from that, and it is make sure you address all aspects of the question. You know, nothing will sink your score faster than only answering part of the question itself or answering a totally different question. I mean, sometimes students do that. You would be surprised where they just kind of write an essay on whatever they feel like writing an essay on. And I know that sounds bizarre, but people do it all the time. Not my students and not you because you're listening to this. So we obviously need to answer their question. And specifically all aspects of the question. So let's go back to just the questions themselves that I posed earlier related to, let's start with the issue essay. The issue essay said, write a response in which you, number one, discuss your views on the policy. So you absolutely need to discuss your views on the policy. It's literally stated right there. We need to make sure you do that. And two, explain your reasoning for the position you take. So what are your views, and specifically, why do you have those views? Explain your reasoning for your positioning. So you have to do both of those things, but then it goes on. In developing and supporting your position, you should. Number three, consider the possible consequences of implementing the policy. Right? So that's a nuance to the question. You're not just saying, in the case of that, a nation should require all of its students to study the same national curriculum. So maybe I'm taking the pro side of that issue statement or issue prompt, right? I do think that a nation should require all of its students. And let me tell you why, and I'll explain why. But if my country does this, here are the possible consequences of that. And here might be the difficulties of implementing it, right? That is in this question, so I need to address that. And then finally, the question itself says, and number four, explain how these consequences shape your position. So in my reading of this question, there are four things I need to make sure that I attack or address, not attack, but address in my essay. And so I will organize those four things neatly in the way I organize the essay, which I'll talk about here a little bit later. The argument essay, going back to my example previously, here was that question. It says, write a response in which you, number one, examine the stated and or unstated assumptions. So I absolutely need to identify what are the assumptions? What are the unstated assumptions? And then it says, be sure to, so number two, the second thing we need to do, explain how the argument depends on these assumptions. So not just what are the assumptions, but how do those assumptions lead to the conclusion? How does the argument, the conclusion, depend on those assumptions? And then it concludes, kind of number three, what the implications are for the argument if the assumptions prove unwarranted. So I need to talk about that. And so you just need to pay attention. And, you know, if you're on a test where you can actually highlight stuff, if you're on a pen and paper test, do that. If not, you might want to jot some things down on your note, your scratch pad, just to make sure that you are absolutely answering all aspects of the question. So that is tip number two. And just for the sake of clarification, to be 100% clear, these examples I just went through were questions specific to those specific prompts, and it was specific to the GRE in this case. That will not be the question every single time. It certainly won't be the exact question on your standardized test, perhaps. And even if you're taking the GRE, different prompts have different specific questions. My point is, you need to read the nuances of the exact question that you are working on, given the prompt that they have given you, and make sure you address all aspects of that question. Tip number three stems from what I just said about organizing your essay, and that is to spend some time brainstorming and outlining before you start to write. A common mistake students make is that they feel like they don't have enough time. You know, there's a time constraint. In a lot of cases, the essay task is around 30 minutes per essay. I know on the GRE and the GMAT, at least at the time of this recording, you know, you have 30 minutes to write your essay. But the point is, you have a limited amount of time. And so students feel like, okay, what's my position? Boom. Okay, I'm just going to start to write. But I love that quote by Abraham Lincoln. At least it's attributed to Abraham Lincoln, so I'm going to say it's from Abraham Lincoln. But he said, quote, "Give me 6 hours to chop down a tree, and I will spend the first 4 sharpening the axe." In other words, he knows that, yes, it may seem like I'm not making very much progress. I haven't taken a single swing at this tree for 4 hours, but I am sharpening my axe. And once I am ready, now when I go to chop down the tree, it's going to be so much easier. I'm going to be prepared. I only need 2 hours to chop down the tree at that point because I have a really sharp axe. That's the mindset you want to take toward the essay task on your standardized test. And that is to say that the extent that you spend time in the beginning outlining, brainstorming, figuring out what your points are going to be, analyzing the argument in the case of the analysis of an argument essay. Spend that time, right, sharpening your axe on your scratch paper. Make note, what are your points going to be? And then put them in the order that you are going to talk about them, right? So maybe you brainstorm 3 or 4 or 5 points that are going to support your position, or the 3 things you're going to talk about, the argument fallacies, the assumptions, whatever it is. And then you say, oh, okay, I'm going to actually talk about this one first, this one second, this one third, right? I'm going to prioritize what I think maybe my best point is. I want that in the first paragraph, so I'm making a good first impression. Then I'll talk about this one next. This one seems to follow from that one. And that's okay if it takes you 2, 3, 4, 5 minutes before you even start writing. In fact, that's what you should do. You should take a minute or two reading the question. Go back to tip number one and tip number two. Make sure you understand the question. Make sure you address all aspects of the question. So spend some time getting your mind around it. And then spend a few minutes brainstorming, outline, come up with your points. And then we can start writing. Because at that point, now we know what we want to say. We know what our position is. And that brings me to tip number four. Tip number four is that you want to have a clear thesis sentence in your introductory paragraph. So obviously your essay should be well organized, and that includes having a very clear introductory paragraph. Now, your intro paragraph should only be really 1 to 2 sentences, 3 sentences at the most. And there should be a very clear thesis sentence that the reader could underline if he or she so chose to say, boom, right here, let me underline it. This is the writer's position. This is your position. And oftentimes it's going to be the last sentence in that introductory paragraph, right? So maybe you just have a little bit of background sentence and then boom, here's where I stand on it. Here is my position. And that's it. I'm going to talk a little bit more about maybe the small difference between the issue essay and the argument essay, but that's what we want to do, have that clear thesis sentence. And actually, that is tip number five. Tip number five speaks to the subtle difference between an issue essay. So in the case of the GRE, if you have to write an issue essay and an argument essay. Now, for those of you like the GMAT, you only have to write an argument essay. So still listen to my tip here. But tip number five is, for the issue essay, take a position. Any position. It doesn't matter which side you're on. Pro, con, doesn't matter. Half the people will take the pro position, half the people will take the con position. All that matters is that you support it well, but take a position. The second half of tip number five is that for the argument essay, leave your opinion at the door. That's not what we are supposed to do. If you think back to my earlier example about what the question is related to the argument essay, it's all about identifying faulty assumptions and strengthening arguments. And does the assumption lead to, you know, does the information lead naturally to the conclusion? That's what we are doing. I don't care what your opinion is. I don't care if you think it's a good conclusion or a bad conclusion. Do what the question is asking you to do. And that is not weighing in with your opinion. It is speaking to the logical flow of the argument itself. Now, moving along, tip number six, make sure your body paragraphs are well developed with key examples. Remember, of the four major things that the readers are looking for, they are looking for good content. Do you have insightful analysis in the case of the argument essay? Do you have strong supporting examples to support your thesis, your position on the issue essay? And so we want to make sure we have those good examples. We want to spend time brainstorming and thinking of those examples. And where should you be pulling those examples? Where are we going to be getting those examples? And here's kind of a nuance to this tip is pull your examples from disparate sources, a lot of different types of sources. One of the mistakes a lot of students make is they just give a bunch of personal opinions about something. Here's what I think. Like, here's what happened to me in my life. Here was my experience when I was going through school. I didn't have a national curriculum and I turned out just fine, thinking back about the earlier prompt. And that's okay to have an example, perhaps, from your own experience, your own kind of first person, you know, personal thoughts or feelings or experience. That's totally okay. But we also are trying to show that we are ready for graduate school, that we are well-read, that we are thoughtful, that we have good ideas, that we can support our position with lots of compelling reasons. And so try to draw your examples from a lot of different sources. For example, think about examples you might be able to come up with from history that would support your position, from politics maybe, or government, from literature or film or the art. It's totally okay if you have watched a movie that was particularly impactful for you, that really teased out a really important point about human nature, for example. That's okay. You can cite that if it's going to support your opinion, especially if it's like a documentary. But even if not, that's okay. Maybe something from the Bible. Personal experience is okay, but again, try to minimize that. And I would say that if you're going to talk about a personal example, maybe have that be last. But the idea is try to at least have some of these sources in the back of your mind. And if you can't think of a great example, don't force it. It's better to have quality examples, right? Quality over quantity. But to the extent that you can come up with something, at least there's a little bit of a list for you to think about when you're coming up with your examples. And just a reminder that the topics that you will be given are general enough that no outside knowledge should be required to be able to answer it. So every graduate level student should have some thoughts or insight on the topic at hand. Now, when I say no outside knowledge is required to understand the prompt, that's absolutely true. What you do want to do is pull on your own reading and experience and, you know, what you know about the world and what you have seen and learned in your education to then weigh in on the given topic with your analysis. That's obviously for the issue essay. Your examples on the argument essay are just the actual analysis of the argument. Again, go back to episode 9. What you're doing there is actually dissecting the argument in terms of premises, assumptions, conclusions, and all of that. So that's a little bit more objective, not subjective at all. Your examples in your body are going to be ideally three good, insightful, you know, flaws, argument flaws, probably, that you are finding in the argument that is given. So that's number six. Number seven, then, is make sure your essay is long enough. And so I talk about how your essay should really be like a really, really good fifth grade essay. And what I mean by that is you're writing a graduate level essay, so you're going to use big words and lots of transition sentences and good fluency of language. Remember that? That's kind of one of the criteria. But again, insightful analysis and lots of really interesting, you know, thoughts and ideas to support your position. So that's what makes it a graduate level essay, not a fifth grade essay. But from an organization standpoint, you want that intro paragraph, then boom, paragraph two, a supporting example. Paragraph three, another supporting example. Paragraph four, maybe another supporting example, or maybe something else specific to the question being asked. Maybe you are supposed to acknowledge the other side, or maybe, you know, in the case of my earlier example, we're supposed to talk about difficulty implementing the policy. So whatever it is, ideally you have three body paragraphs and then a conclusion. And if you do that, and if you do that in under 30 minutes or 25 minutes or whatever the time limit is on your essay will be long enough. So students get hung up on this all the time. Like, how many words? Well, maybe 300 to 500 words. So if you're absolutely looking for some sort of a range, 300 to 500 is pretty average. And I would say that if you can get to the five paragraphs and if you can get closer to the 400 to 500 words or even more, that's great, because shorter essays do historically get lower scores. That said, quality is always more important than quantity. So if you can come up with two really, really, really good examples, but you would be really forcing a third one just for the sake of having a third example, maybe just stick with two really good examples and flesh them out a little bit more. And then make sure you have a conclusion as well. So it should be fine if you have those elements. Your essay should be long enough. Just practice it, and I think the more you practice it, the more effective you will get. Which brings us to tip number eight, and I have mentioned this before, and it speaks to one of the criteria of a really good essay, and that is fluency of language. We have a little bit of control over that if you follow tip number eight, which is to use transitions between your examples and or between body paragraphs. So throw in some words like, you know, the first faulty assumption that the author makes is that blah, 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 blah. Or the author mistakenly assumes that such and such and such and such and such and such. In so doing, comma, blah, 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 right? So those types of transition words, you know, furthermore, however, you know, another example of, a second example of, those types of words that start, you know, consequently, moreover, those types of transition words speak to the fluency of language. It also is part of keeping a well-organized essay and will really help your essay pop. Tip number nine is to use complete sentences and correct grammar. Again, that's one of the criteria. Maybe a little bit of a lesser criteria because, again, it's okay if you have small mistakes. We understand, and again, when I say we, I'm talking about the graders, that these are at best really, really good rough drafts. You do only have a certain amount of time. You know, you should leave a little bit of time at the end to proofread. So from a time management standpoint, like Abraham Lincoln sharpening his axe, spend some time in the beginning prepping before you just madly start to write, but then also leave a little bit of time, a minute or two at the end to go back and proofread. Maybe you'll catch a grammar error. Maybe you'll catch a misspelled word. Do your best to spell everything correctly, but as long as it doesn't distract the reader from understanding what you're trying to say, you should probably be okay. The other thing I would say with tip number nine, maybe this actually goes back more to tip number eight, is in terms of fluency of language, try to throw in a couple of big words, big vocabulary words, to show that you have a good command of the English language. But it's a double-edged sword, because while you want to throw in a few of those big types of words, A, make sure you're using them correctly. You don't want to throw in a big word just to show how smart you are and then it turns out you used it wrong. But the other thing is you don't want to throw too many of them in there either, because then your essay just looks like a jumbled mess of big words and you're trying to sound too smart, and then all of a sudden it's actually really hard to read. If you've ever had that experience of reading somebody's writing that's just a whole bunch of really big words, it's like, come on, buddy, just tell me what you're trying to tell me, right? So kind of strike that balance with tip number nine. And tip number 10, and this is a biggie, so if you're taking notes, underline it, bold it, come back to it. But tip number 10 is don't run out of time. What you absolutely do not want to do is have time expire as you are mid-sentence. From an organizational standpoint, remember your very good fifth grade essay, intro paragraph, body paragraphs, and then you do want to have a concluding paragraph. So get to that concluding paragraph, but what you don't want to do is run out of time halfway through your last sentence or your second to last sentence. That will tank your score as well. You need to show that you can control your time, that you can manage your time, and you want to conclude your thoughts. Maybe you're going to say some important things in that conclusion, especially if there's a part of the question itself. Remember, go back to tip number two, address all aspects of the question. Maybe there's something valuable that you need to address and you're going to do it in your conclusion. You don't want to run out of time and miss out on that as well. So writing these essays isn't particularly hard. Writing these essays in 25 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever the length of time that you are given on your standardized test, that's a different animal. The good news is all you need to do is practice it a couple of times and you'll develop that internal clock and you will be able to finish the essay in the amount of time and get a great score if you learn, follow, and implement these 10 tips for a perfect essay score on test day. So I hope you found that helpful. We do have a little bit more. We're going to do a From the Mailbag segment where I think you're going to learn something valuable as well. But let me just say one more thing about writing effective essays. I talked about some of the things that maybe we have a little bit less control over, and yet, why not work on those? Why not work on improving those? So I just wanted to share a couple of resources with you. I will post them in the show notes below. Now, the good news is some of you guys will automatically, sort of inherently, be improving your writing by studying for the rest of your standardized test. For example, if you're studying for the GMAT, as you know, on the verbal section of the GMAT, there is a question type called sentence correction, where you need to learn to correct sentences, i.e. find faults in them, which means you need to learn some English grammar, and you need to learn how to write effectively, and what makes one sentence more effective than another sentence. And so you can just apply everything that you're already learning for the verbal section of the GMAT to your essay. So hopefully your essay will automatically improve just as you're studying for your exam. Same thing with the SAT, same thing with the GRE. You're learning vocabulary, you're learning how parts of the sentence work, road signs and keywords, which are some of the things that I talk about in terms of figuring out how to complete the sentences on the GRE. All stuff that is part of fluency of language, all part of making sure your sentences flow well and one sentence leads well to the next sentence. So again, inherent in studying well for your standardized test should automatically help you become a better writer. And so one of the resources is a course like mine. You know, make sure that you have good instruction, how to analyze an argument, for example, right? That's all built into my GMAT verbal course or any sort of, you know, textbook or whatever resource you are going to have to actually learn the nuts and bolts and X's and O's of your standardized test should help you with the essay as well. But beyond that, there are two books that I really like by a gentleman named Brandon Royal. He has a book called The Little Red Writing Book, which is all about how to write effectively. And then he has another book called The Little Gold Grammar Book, which is just how it sounds. It is kind of explaining and teaching some of the most basic rules of grammar, which, by the way, should help you with the sentence correction portion of the GMAT. If you're studying for the GMAT, there's a little plug for that book. But nevertheless, seek some outside sources to help you with some of the mechanics, which you may not be great at now, but you can improve a little bit between now and test day. And the final thing I would say is one way to improve your essays is to get really familiar with what good essays look like. And there's a page on the GRE website where they show you sample essays of different score levels. So you can go in there and you can actually read, here's what a 5.5 to 6.0 essay would look like for this particular prompt. And maybe you can actually look at the prompt and try to write that essay on your own and then compare your essay to their essay. Particularly for the argument essay, Did you come up with insightful analysis? Did you identify the right assumptions? Well, why don't you go look at theirs and see what they did? And that's part of learning. You can learn that way. You can practice using some of the sample essay prompts that the different tests provide you, whether in their official guides or on their websites. I'll provide some of those links in the show notes below as well. So practicing is a great way to improving as well. We get better at the things that we do more often. So the more you practice writing, the better you will get at writing. It is as simple as that. So there are a few resources for you if you are looking to improve your writing between now and test day. This week's From the Mailbag question comes from Eric. Eric emailed me. He was thinking about taking my course, and he did end up signing up for the course, but he said, I was wondering if it would make more sense to go through your program before going through the official guide, because your problem-solving techniques are probably more efficient. End quote. And the simple answer to that, and if you have a similar question or concern, the simple answer is yes. So really the question being asked is, should you start doing practice problems going through the official guide is really what he was talking about, but the official guide is largely a source of practice problems, or should you go through a course first? And the answer is really kind of simultaneously. I mean, if you think about the course syllabus that I provide with my courses, for example, I'm assigning you content instruction and videos to watch and lessons to learn the content, but then also do practice problems from my worksheets and or the official guide. So doing them kind of immediately one after the other makes a lot of sense. But the analogy that I would give you is, if you're learning to play golf, you wouldn't want to just go to the driving range, get a bucket of balls, and start hitting golf balls, right? That would be like going straight to the official guide and starting to do practice problems. But you haven't learned anything yet. So how are you going to hit golf balls effectively at the driving range if you haven't gotten a lesson yet? If you haven't watched some YouTube videos, or you haven't had an instructor teach you how to hold the club and how to initiate the backswing and so forth and so on, right? So it wouldn't make any sense. You need the program first. You need the coaching first. You need the lessons first so you know what to do. Then you go to the driving range and hit a bucket of balls. And that's when you go to the official guide, in this case, for your standardized test, and you start to then do a bunch of practice problems. And then when your ball starts to slice off to the right, or you're not making good contact, or the ball's not going very far, then you go back to your coach, or you go back and take a lesson or join a clinic to figure out what you're doing wrong. And then, okay, I'll fix that. Now you go back to the driving range, right? So that's the same mindset that you want to take in preparing for your standardized test. Ideally do both simultaneously, but you absolutely need the program before you just go straight to some sort of official source of practice problems, or just go take a practice test. I have students say all the time, you know, hey, or you know, prospective students, I've been taking a bunch of practice tests, but my scores aren't going up. Well, if all you're doing is taking practice tests, how are you going to get any better, right? At some point, you need the program, you need the coaching, you need the feedback, you need to figure out why you got questions wrong, how to do them properly in the future, so that when you then go take your next practice test, you have improved before you go take that next practice test. So, Eric, I hope that helps. And for the rest of you who may have had a similar question, I hope that mindset and that thinking helps you as well. Here we are at the end of another episode of the Dominate Test Prep podcast. As William Shakespeare so eloquently said, parting is such sweet sorrow. I always have so much fun doing these episodes, and then it's always a little bit sad when it is over. But the good news is, I will see you again very soon for the next episode. But first, as always, I do want to leave you with a parting shot, an action item, something tangible you can do to implement what you just learned, and in this case, improve your essay score. And the action item is very simply to go read some sample essays for either the issue essay or the argument essay or both, depending on which one or ones are on the standardized test you are going to be taking, so that you start to get familiar with what they're like and also what a good essay looks like. And what I am going to do is I'm going to post a link to the GRE website, and specifically the analytical writing portion of that website, where they actually have, as I mentioned earlier, some sample argument prompts, issue prompts, just essay prompts, so you can just kind of click to whichever tab you're interested in. But then, as I mentioned, they actually have sample essays of different score levels and get very familiar with what a very good issue essay response might look like or an argument essay response might look like, because that is a big part of learning. And the reason I'm doing it from the GRE is because, frankly, I think they've done the best job of putting that free content out there on their website. The GMAT doesn't really have that, again, at least not at the time of this recording. They have some sample prompts and they have some description of what you're supposed to do, but they don't have, you know, the different sample essays of every single score level. So you can literally see what like a score of 0 would look like, or a score of 1 or 2. For you guys, you want to see what a really good score, a high score would be. So go read those, because then you get a sense of what you're trying to do, and it makes it much more likely that you will be able to do it. And again, even if you're not taking the GRE specifically, on all of the standardized tests, what you're trying to do is pretty much the same, so I think you will really benefit from that as well. And of course, if you are taking the GRE, well, then it's a great resource for you to have anyway. So check the show notes below for those links. Go ahead and do that. And then click subscribe if you haven't subscribed. Share this episode with your friends who are also taking a standardized test. Leave us a review. Maybe I'll give you a shout out on the next episode if you leave us a favorable review. Even if you don't leave us a favorable review, I want an honest review. What do you like? What don't you like about the Dominate Test Prep podcast? But I appreciate you as a listener. So thank you again. I pray that you have found this helpful. Go out, have a fantastic week, and I hope that I have empowered you to dominate your test. Take care, everyone.